Listeners, I think I just literally jinxed my damn hockey team. The first series, I wore Islanders jersey to work every single day, and they swept the Pittsburgh Penguins. Then, I decided not to wear Islanders jersey, and they got swept by the Carolina Hurricanes. Not disappointed, but sad. And wasn't expecting them to play this bad in the second round. But, as Islanders fans, we have a lot to look forward to. Let's start the damn show.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
Hey, yo, B! And please pardon my fresh as we bring you an all-new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, May 6, 2019, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast, and Satellite Radio. Yes, listeners, we are on all of those social media sites, so be sure to hit the subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on this show, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. We're also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button. We have a great show for you today, listeners. I know I said I wasn't going to talk about football, but I got to talk about football because mini camps for rookies happen over the weekend and during the week for the New York Jets and the New York Giants. So we're going to talk about Daniel Jones, and we're going to talk about Le'Veon Bell not showing up to Jets camp. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk some NBA playoffs, as it's been a great playoff run this year for the NBA. Every game has been exciting for the most part, so we're going to touch up on that. We're going to talk a little bit of baseball, and we're going to talk about the New York Islanders, whose season has come to end after getting swept by the Carolina Hurricanes out in Carolina. We should be happy for the season, but there's some work that needs to be done during the offseason for the Islanders. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we gotta find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm on my way back from Chicago. Wanted to catch the Redbirds versus the Cubs over the weekend.
Listen, man, Mike, you know I said in last week's show that we were done talking about football for a little bit, but obviously we're not done talking about football because your boy forgot that mini camps, well, not mini camp, but rookie mini camps, was this week for the Giants and the Jets, all right? Now, speaking of the Jets, man, Mike, I just want to get your opinion on this, because if the New York Jets thought that a $52.5 million contract was going to be enough to get Le'Veon Bell to show up to voluntary minicamp this offseason, maybe they thought they were wrong. You know, the Jets kicked off a three-day minicamp on Tuesday, and Bell was a no-show for the first day of action. Although Bell was a Jets, he was their biggest signing, man, Mike, of the offseason, and new coach Adam Gase didn't sound too concerned about him not being there, mostly because he wasn't required to be there. Obviously, it's voluntary, and voluntary means you don't have to come if you don't want to. I would think that Gates might have been disappointed about Bell's decision not to show up, but that might have to do with the fact that the team can be, he can't be punished by coach complaints. I'm sorry, but the coach could be punished if he complains about a player not showing up. So voluntary or not, in my opinion, I would like to think that you have to figure the Jets have to be at least somewhat disappointed, Mad Mike, that Bell and Sharpe, especially considering the fact that he's less than 6 weeks removed from signing a four-year, $52.5 million contract with the team. And Bell was at the start of the team's offseason workouts back in April 8th. So he did attend that. But that mostly consists of lifting weights. So he didn't actually get to practice or get to practice any at all. So the mini camp is different because it allows the team to practice on the field for the first time. So most teams have to wait until June before they can hold the mini camp. But listeners, for any team that's hired a new coach in the offseason, they're allowed to hold the voluntary mini camp as long as it comes early in the offseason program. So one other reason, Matt Mike, in my opinion, that the Jets probably would have liked for Bell to be on the field, again, and these are things that I want to get your opinion on, is that he hasn't been a part of an NFL offseason practice in nearly 2 years. So the fact that he sat out 2018 means he hasn't been on the field for actual practice since 2017. Listeners, I'm not saying that he hasn't worked out, but I'm saying that he hasn't practiced with an NFL team since 2017. And if nothing else, the Jets could have seen what kind of shape the running back is in. Although I would like to think that he's probably in decent enough shape. And even though Bell was a no-show, Gase, again, seems convinced that the running back will show up in good shape whenever he decides to show up. So, Matt Mike, what's your thoughts on that or what I've talked about thus far? Are you concerned that he didn't show up? Are you upset that he didn't show up? Are you disappointed that he didn't show up? What's your thoughts on that?
Lloyd, I think he was selfishly smart. I think that in saying that, I'm a little, I'm not going to use the word upset or angry. I'm a little bothered that, you know, the optics of it. You just signed this $52 million deal. People call Jets crazy for giving that kind of money to a running back, especially a running back, like you've mentioned, hasn't played since 2017, hasn't practiced. But at the same time, I kind of anticipated this. And the reason being that I don't think he's in good enough shape yet. I think he's aware of what kind of shape he's in. And I think he knows what those stories are going to be. And instead of having those stories out there, I think he took it upon himself to stay out of, you know, voluntarily stayed away. This way, those stories never come out. You never have to deal with the, well, you know, if he's out of shape and he's making $50 million, why would he get in shape for the season? I just think he purposely stayed away from it. Now, that's why I say I think he was selfishly smart. That's why I said smart, being that I think he's trying to eliminate some stories and not give a negative perception on the field of his performance. Now, I say selfish because I do think it is selfish. I think that the Jets have the opportunity, an opportunity right now that other teams don't have because they have a new coach. They have the ability to put these guys on the field a little more often than a normal team would. You know, the Patriots didn't have voluntary training camp or whatever you want to call it this week. Only the Jets and a handful of other teams. So he missed a golden opportunity to actually get some field work with his teammates. And that to me was selfish. So he's a polarizing figure. And if you're not there, you have to acknowledge that. I have to acknowledge that your absence. Lloyd has to acknowledge your absence. The newspapers have to acknowledge it. So one way or another, you do have to acknowledge that some kind of a story is going to be written about this. Whether you come in out of shape and they write the you were out of shape story, or you don't come at all, and now we have this story. So selfish from that standpoint.
Right. I mean, you would like to think that he would be there, new team. He's been out of football for a little bit, but at the same time, he's an NFL player, so I'm sure you would like to think that he's taking care of his body somewhat, because at some point, he had to realize that he was going to sign somewhere, right? I mean, Le'Veon Bell is one of the, you know, at one point, I mean, at you know, when he was playing, he was considered one of the best running backs in the NFL. And obviously it showed because Pittsburgh not only franchise tagged him once, but they franchise tagged him twice. And if Bell's plan is to skip every voluntary practice this offseason, that means the Jets likely won't have him on the field until they hold a mandatory minicamp, which runs from June 4th to June 6th. So also, I'm sorry, go ahead, Matt Mike.
No, I was going to say, I happen to think that he'll show up because I think they have three of them, right? I think this is, constitutes they have three right now. I think he'll be there. At some point, he'll be there. He won't be there for the full one, but I'm not totally worried about it just yet.
Yeah, and look, linebacker Darren Lee was also no short minicamp, but that wasn't a huge surprise given the fact that the team has reportedly had him on a trading block for most of the offseason, Matt Mike. So he was a no-show as well.
I can tell you, I know that to be false. If they could trade him, they would. But I can tell you that I know for a fact that they haven't had any conversations regarding him with anybody as far as being traded for other players at the moment. And you had a lot of speculation last week. We talked about this, that he would be a day three trade. And I can confirm for you via sources, you know, our sources, that they didn't have one conversation on day three about Darren Lee. So I don't know how much of it. I know that he didn't show up simply because you don't want to get hurt and ruin your chances of being traded in a package. But at the same time, there's some people that believe he is going to be a part of this team next season because he's only guaranteed one point. I believe it's $6 million, $1.58 million, because of the suspension. He lost half of his salary. So there are people that think it, me and you might say, hey, well, if I only have 1 year and the Jets didn't pick up my fifth year on Friday, then why would I come in and play super hard and give it my all? Well, here's why he's going to come and play super hard and give it his all. He's playing for his NFL life. The difference in his play this year will dictate what kind of second contract he gets. Is he going to get that, you know, that prove it 1 year, $3 million deal, or is he going to get a 3 year, $24 million deal, which is the going average for a middle inside linebacker in today's NFL? It's a big difference, me and you know, between playing on a 1 year deal at $3 million and having your future secured at $24 million. I think Darren Lee and the Jets both know he's going to show up this year, regardless if he's playing for them or somebody else.
Listen, I mean, you know, say what you want about Darren Lee. I don't think he's that bad of a football player, Matt Mike. He has tons of potential.
He's not an inside linebacker, though.
No, he's not. Yeah, he's not. He's right in the butt to be an inside linebacker. But, you know, I mean, you know, maybe, like you said, maybe the Jets are in a win-win situation with this, or possibly in a win-win situation, you know, with this, because they don't have to, you know, obviously they could lose him for possibly nothing, and maybe they tried to see what they can get for him.
And maybe I would make him the weak side. I'm being honest with you. I would make him the weak side, outside linebacker. I would put Polite on the strong side outside of Leo. And I would see what Darren Lee can do for you as a situational pass rusher or a 3-4 outside linebacker. At this point in time, like you said, he's light in the butt. He doesn't cover tight ends well enough, even though he did last year. You just can't have him in the run game. He gets blocked out, and then he puts his safeties out of position constantly because he's removed from most running plays.
Listen, I'll tell you this much, Matt Mike. Talking about excitement, and you know I'm not a Jets fan, but holy Toledo, am I excited about this defense your team has.
Woo. Yeah, you know what, Lloyd? I did want to talk. It's funny because we weren't supposed to talk football today, but I did want to talk to you about one thing. There's a perception that the Jets are living in this outdated world of strengthening their up the middle. So the Jets are focused on ends and tackles and their inside linebackers. It's been pretty clear, right? They re-signed Henry Anderson. They drafted Quinnen Williams. They re-upped with Steve McClendon. Avery Williamson was brought in last year. They decided to move on from Darren Lee and go with C.J. Mosley, which I think is an absolute steal of a move. Just a couple years ago, they went 1-2 at safety in the draft with May and Adams. Adams and May, sorry. So I've been hearing a lot this week that the Jets have actually ignored, you know, the outside and you know, the perimeter. And I'll ask you this, and you've heard it, you've seen it. The Giants are actually somehow stressing it with the Lawrence pick, but the NFL has kind of gone to an interior defense. They want to flush quarterbacks, which is why the Giants have kind of struggled with Eli Manning, right? Because Eli doesn't get flushed. He's unable to move, so he's not being flushed. He's just going down and taking the sacks. So the Jets are actually doing exactly what's going, you know, the what I guess the model defense for the NFL has right now of collapsing the interior and flushing quarterbacks. And when you have guys like Tom Brady out, or you know, for example, who isn't exactly so mobile, that actually is a way to improve your, you know, exterior pass rush, especially where the Jets struggle, right? So if I can collapse the middle and control the entire middle of the field, it should make the out, you know, the outer edges of my defense that much better. So I don't understand why the Jets are getting smoked this week for that being their plan.
Yeah, I don't get it either. It makes all the sense in the world. And boy, you know, you got two studs up that middle, man. If Quinnen, I mean, not Quinnen Williams. No, I did say it right. If Quinnen Williams can be the same player that he was in college, and it seems like he is. I mean, sometimes you could look at a player and know when they have it. And when the talent level that they exhibit in college, if it transfers over to the pros, and he exactly looks like that type of player, Matt Mike.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you have two of the best middle interior linemen in the NFL. I'm not saying they are the best, but two of the best. They're definitely up there with Ndamukong Suh and, help me out, Aaron Donald. And, you know, Tampa has, you know, McCoy, and you know, Atlanta has two strong D tackles. So, you know, the Jets are up there, man. And if they can get, like you said, if that strength is up that outside, you know, and then you got them two hitters, May and Jamal Adams, man. And if Tremaine Johnson could come back, Mike, and have that type of season like he's capable of having, you guys are going to be scary.
Yeah, and consider this, something else that's just something that I saw, a discussion about over the weekend. The Jets are not, and not saying that they haven't tried to trade, not saying that they're not going to trade Darren Lee or try, but I saw, you know, you're looking at, there's guys that are available. Chris Harris Jr., cornerback from Denver. You know, Denver just ushered in a whole new defense themselves. Maybe Darren Lee in a pick there. Xavier Rhodes. In Minnesota. Minnesota is strapped for cash, so he could be available at $14 million a year. The Jets still have over $30 million left in cap space, so they do have moves. You know, like I said, Darren Lee and his $1.58 million salary guaranteed this year. If you can move him in a draft pick and land Xavier Rhodes, and now all of a sudden you got Xavier Rhodes on the outside with Tremaine Johnson, and that defense is healthy, like we just spoke about over the middle. Can you imagine?
Listen, I'm imagining it right now. And that's exactly why I'm saying what I'm saying. That is exactly why I'm saying what the... And the defense, not for nothing, man, Mike, the defense was good last year. Even with the issues that the Jets had.
Yeah.
Bad and coaching. And we all said that the coaching staff was... I remember so much we would give the coaching staffs Fs. You know, and C pluses for their grades week in and week out. And if Greg Williams is as good as advertised, that makes a world of difference, as we both know.
If Adam Gase is anything like the hype was, you know, before he kind of flamed out with Tannehill. I mean, man, it can be special offensively too. That's the other key, right? For most Jet fans, even you know, just outsiders like yourself, how much of this, how much is it that the Jets have a good general manager, a strong general manager, versus or was it coaching? You know, if Adam Gase comes in and Adam Gase looks really good as coach, or this offense starts to click, and you know, some guys that probably struggled or were slow to develop under Todd Bowles start to develop now. Then all of a sudden, we're having a different conversation, right? If Chris Herndon turns into an 800-yard tight end, right? If Robbie Anderson continues and becomes eventually becomes that 1,000-yard receiver that we thought that he was going to end up being 2 years ago under John Morton. If Sam Darnold blows up, let's say the offensive line, and you know, the offensive line has kind of sputtered, and we've had this conversation where we're like, you know, this offensive line is not that bad. We don't know why they're not playing better, or they haven't reached heights that we thought, but this offensive line has talent on it. Is it Todd Bowles that wasn't developing the offensive line? You know, Brian Winters has actually regressed under Todd Bowles, and we're talking about a former John Isaac pick who, you know, under Rex actually wasn't that bad. And then he's just gotten progressively worse under Todd Bowles. So, you know, Brandon Shell have another level he can reach under new, you know, offensive coaching? As a matter of fact, Jonathan Harrison, me and you both, I don't understand how they cannot sign a center. What if Jonathan Harrison is that answer? What if Adam Gase and his coaching staff is saying, hey, you know, remember the offensive line coach for the New York Jets is actually one of the architects of that Dallas offensive line. So what if he's looking at Jonathan Harrison and saying, hey, I need a lighter athletic centers who could get out on a zone block. Maybe Jonathan Harrison is going to turn into a guy, and they found a way to save $9 million on that spot. Who knows? That's one thing that I'm intrigued about this year is how much of it is coaching.
We'll see. But the other New York team, Matt Mike, the New York Football Giants, also had the first of two mini camp practices. They also had it over the weekend, and it's in the books. The whole thing about, you know, Daniel Jones and the media ripping the pick apart, including myself, there's reports that Daniel Jones looked pretty good. And obviously, look, Matt Mike, I still don't think it was the right pick to make. They're not playing, and they don't have shoulder pads on. They're practicing in jersey and shorts. All right, and there was some throws that he missed and some others that generally look like, you know, he had a half idea what he was doing on the first full day. You know, as an NFL player, but he threw at least one short pass that I watched entirely too hard in the practice, but he did seem to settle down. There weren't any interceptions, so that was a, you know, a plus, so to speak, and no embarrassingly memorable mistakes that he made, man. Mike, he threw one really nice deep pass to Darius Slayton that was dropped. Slayton dropped a couple passes as well. Pat Shurmur thought that, you know, he looked good. And Pat Shurmur was quoted as saying, you really don't want to evaluate the quarterback on the first day because they're getting used to the receivers. The second day, things start to smooth out a little bit. That was what Coach Shurmur was basically saying. But all in all, the media basically said that he had a pretty decent 2 days of practice, Matt Mike. Whether that's promising or not, who cares? I would like to say it makes sense, but not if you don't plan on playing him for another three damn years. Then it makes no sense at all. Some people seem to think at some point Daniel Jones is going to take over as a Giants starter quarterback, maybe around week 9, week 10. I forgot, I don't know if it was you that was bringing it up that was saying they have Dallas and somebody else back-to-back.
Yeah, I think the Giants, they have the Giants, I mean the Jets and Dallas in the bye week. Dallas at home, Jets on the road, but obviously
Some people are thinking maybe after that Jets game, because like you were saying, you get a bye week. You get 2 weeks of pretty much practice. And maybe you'll come back.
Yeah, but no traveling, and, you know, if you think about it, you get no traveling.
At this point, can we even believe one damn word that Gettleman spews out of his mouth? He's done nothing but lie and deceive to the fans and social media.
But before we go into Gettleman, that's a good idea. We can go back into Gettleman. But before, I just want to say about Daniel Jones. I don't know what he's supposed to show. And obviously the microscope's on him because it was a bad pick. Also because of his GM, his coach, coming out on a Michael Kay show this week and saying he also knew for a fact. Nobody knew for a fact. So the microscope's on him. Who knows? Like you said, we don't know what he's going to do. He's got no pads on. It's fairly warm outside. You know, his arm strength is in question. And him being able to throw on, you know, normal days is not what the issue is going to be. The issue is going to be how is he going to be able to zip the ball through the wind in November and December at Giant Stadium. And whatever he does this weekend is not going to answer that. So I understand the media coverage and everything, but it's a waste of our time. You know what I mean? Like, it's a waste of our time to I'd rather talk about why Odell didn't show up to Browns camp, opposed to talk about Daniel Jones at this point, simply because there's nothing he does. We know that he's not the starter. We know that Eli's going to start the season no matter what. So, regardless of what he does, we're not talking about Russell Wilson getting drafted in the third round and them benching, you know, Seahawks benching Matt Flynn and going with the rookie. This is not going to happen. This is Eli's team. We know it. They got rid of Odell for a reason. And that reason is because this is either trying to give this team back to Eli. And Eli will usher this team to Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley he's good and ready.
Yeah, listen, if they re-sign this dude, I might jump out the damn window. Seriously. Enough already. Enough. But I just want to throw out some more notes, Mad Mike. Speaking of Slayton, he's a team's fifth-round pick, Mad Mike. He dropped at least four passes from Daniel Jones. But
I meant six, but okay.
He did, however, make a couple of contested catches late in practice, and Coach Sherman was saying that the drops, that's why you practice. There's a lot guys have to get used to. I thought he finished the day pretty well. But the drop season's a no-no. And I think he has potential. Listen, right now the Giants don't have any downfield threats, Mad Mike. They don't have any. Golden Tate is not a downfield threat. Sterling Shepard is not a downfield threat.
But that's by design, Lloyd. And you're right. And Slayton isn't going to – that's by design. And that's why I don't – and not to cut you off. That's why I don't want to hear anything about, well, Slayton can be that guy. They don't want that guy. That's why they invested heavily in Sterling Shepard and Golden Tate over the next 2 to 3 years. Because, one, and this is the other reason now we know that they were targeting Daniel Jones, because Daniel Jones was one of the worst quarterbacks 10-plus yards accuracy-wise. So now we know that they're going to live in that 1 to 8 yard range, which tells me another thing, that they're content. What we saw from Saquon Barkley last year, we're going to see more of it. We're going to see a guy who's going to be overused and banged up because he's going to be working underneath a lot when he's not carrying the ball. You can't have this.
No, you can't. And also, undrafted rookie free agent that the Giants signed, Syracuse quarterback Eric Dungy, might be a player to watch, man, Mike. He's 6'3", 220 pounds.
But he can't throw the ball.
Yeah, and he's listed as a quarterback tight end on a minicamp roster.
You know who he is? Taysom Hill.
Yeah. Yep.
From New Orleans.
That's exactly who I was getting ready to name. I was getting ready to compare him to Taysom Hill.
Yes, sir.
You ain't going to play him to that. And they seem to think, they seem to like this guy, and they think he's a good football player. And they want to just keep on working him to see what happens. It's going to be interesting to see. But also another player that stood out, Mad Mike, and I'm going to butcher his name, and maybe you can help me out. His name is Freedom Akinmuadoulin. Akinmuadoulin. He's a linebacker from Nebraska. He turned a lot. He looked solid in his practice. And just to update listeners on Corey Ballantyne, that's the DB that the Giants signed, or drafted, I should say, that was shot and his teammate was killed. They asked about him recovering from a gunshot. Well, he got a gunshot wound to the booty.
Yeah, no, we got to kind of talk about that situation too, right? Because his father had to come out and defend him against Mike Francesa this week, and Francesa had to kind of dealing with the. He made an off the cuff comment, basically saying, "You're telling us that you're worried about you were drafting, and you're so focused on changing the culture and getting high character guys, and your draft pick is shot the same day you make it. So yeah, really, you're concerned." And his father has come out and defend him, like honor roll student, GPA 4.0, you know, et cetera. Basically saying never ever been in trouble. He was the exact meaning of wrong place, wrong time, his best friend was murdered, and you're taking a shot at his football character for what reason?
Speaking of Mike Francesa, I was watching the Boomer Esiason show, and this dude called into the show and started going bonkers.
Yeah.
Is something wrong with this dude? I've noticed he's had problems with Michael Kay and Don LaGreca. I mean, it's, you know, listen, everybody is entitled to opinion. And, you know, he called into the Boomer Esiason show and was like, well, I don't listen to your show, but I'm calling to correct you guys on you saying I said one thing about Daniel Jones and Eli Manning, and I didn't. So if you're going to say something pertaining to me, make sure you say it the right way. And Boomer Esiason was like, well, I guess you listened to our show somewhat. Because obviously, if you didn't listen to our show, you wouldn't know what we was talking about. You'll mention your name.
Yeah, no. Let me tell you something. A lot of people don't like him. A lot of people in his own studio, they don't like what he did as far as getting, you know, CMB bumped off. Boomer spoke about that. Him using the ratings against them, not ignoring the fact that new shows, new blood needs time to grow. And if you look at it, they move them to 1 o'clock and they're killing it right now. One reason is, I don't want to go too much into that radio stuff, but yeah, he deserved to get ripped. And I was actually going to go at him in my rant, kind of giving a glimpse into
it. Okay, because it's going to be, I want to hear what you got to say, and I'm sure the listeners do. But so, just getting back to the Giants, man, Mike, hate to cut you off.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
DeAndre Baker looked really good. There was only one pass completed on him, and that one pass, he went to go undercut the route and was in position, but it was a nice throw made by Daniel Jones. And on the flip side, the other corner, Julian Love from Notre Dame, who a lot of people love to pick, he didn't look so good. And the Giants are now tinkering with moving him to safety.
Well, here's the thing. It's the one knock. And the only reason, and you know I love Julian Love. You know it's exactly the guy I wanted the Jets to take. But the one thing I did do is I did a lot more research after the Jets didn't take him. And the reason they didn't take him was simply because they think he's too small. And while some people say that he has loose hips and he'll be good enough, he'll be good enough to at least play the slot. The Jets felt he was a little more stiffer than on tape than most people thought, and they didn't think he was going to transition well because of his size. He was going to struggle with some of the bigger receivers. Now, once again, I like the kid. I like the pick, so I'm willing to give him a shot. But I'll be honest with you: you drafted a cornerback, and after two practices, it's not the right time to give up on him as a cornerback. His tape didn't.
But it's amazing, you know, how people can do that.
No, but
you know, just like after two practices, people are saying, oh, Daniel Jones is not as bad as we thought he was. It's two damn practices. Obviously, you can see what a player has. You can see what potential that a player has. And this is a whole new ball game for these young men. It is. You know, so kudos to DeAndre Baker. I mean, obviously the Giants traded away, you know, more than what I felt they should have to move up and grab him. But that was one of the Giants' biggest needs outside of pass rusher. I mean, they needed everything. They needed everything. But look who the hell they had playing corner last year, man. Mike, I can't even name half the dudes they had playing corner outside of Janoris Jenkins and Grant Haley.
You're right. But here's the other issue. And here's one issue and maybe one reason why they're already looking at Love moving to safety. Remember they used their third round pick I'm forgetting the word for it.
Supplementary.
Supplemental pick, yes. On Sam Beal. And Beal is not an outside corner. Sam Beal is a slot corner. So you actually, the same way they signed Tate and Shepard to play the same position, they actually drafted a third round and fourth round cornerback to play the same position. So maybe the competition is going to be which one looks better in the slot, and then we're going to look to move the other guy to safety. But Jabril Peppers is not good enough safety where you can now develop somebody at, you know, the other spot, and hey, let's just see if he can do it or not. It's not, we're not talking about all world, you know, we're not talking about Landon Collins, Pro Bowl, three-time Pro Bowler Landon Collins. We're talking about, you know, Jabril Peppers, who's still finding his way in this league. So I wouldn't give up on him yet, but I do, from that standpoint, I do get there. I do get the idea. We still haven't seen if Sam Beal can play slot corner in the NFL.
He better be able to do something. I was just about to curse using a, you know, a supplemental pick on a, you know, on the third round on him, and he ain't done jack squat yet.
You're right. He was on IR with a shoulder injury. He didn't play one game last year.
And because he was on IR, that he can't participate in this camp because of that. Just to point,
just to throw that
out there to you listening. So the first look we'll be able to get, you know, is when they have the mini camp where all the players, you know, the June 4th through the 6th that we mentioned. So we'll see what happens. So I can't say that we're going to completely not talk about football, because obviously I said that this week and look what happened. First half of the show, it's been talking about football. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk some hockey as my New York Islanders got swept by the Carolina Hurricanes. We're going to talk a little baseball and a little bit of basketball. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Mad Mike, as I say this, not in so much disappointment, but in sadness, the New York Islanders season has come to an end, and the Owls surprised a lot of people, including myself, Mad Mike. I was just literally expecting this team to possibly become one of the wild card teams to make the playoffs or not make the playoffs at all right? Let alone being in the second round. And now the offseason begins. In my opinion, Mad Mike, this team has a lot on the agenda, all right? And the season came to a disappointing end. Obviously, I'm sure the players wanted to move forward in Carolina on Friday night. And there's so many positives to draw from the Islanders this year, Mad Mike. But let's face it, Lou Lamoriello has a lot to do. And in my opinion, the first order of business is for the Owls, you know, as far as what they do with their impending free agents. So they have unrestricted free agents in Andrus Lee, Brock Nelson, Jordan Eberle, Valtteri Filippula, and the goalie, Robin Leonard, which I don't know why he didn't start Robin Leonard and decided to start Thomas Greiss in that game. That was a bit head-scratching to me when I didn't think that Robin Leonard necessarily played well. He made a stupid mistake as far as handling the puck, which caused the Islanders to lose Game 3. But outside of that, I thought that he's played solid and goal, but
it was just about trying to change up the feeling around the locker room. It wasn't – Grice was giving up half a goal more than him, so it wasn't about giving up less goals. It was just about trying to do something to wake up the locker room. The locker room, I guess, had already fell down, and if Grice could come in –
Man, talking about having time away, man, Mike, that time that they had after they beat the Pittsburgh Penguins, swept them, that did them boots in.
They
did them in. They came out flat game one. They came out flat game two. They had a little bit of life with them in game three. You know, and they came out flat game four. And this was an Islanders team, man, Mike, that made so many mistakes defensively in this series against Carolina. And that is so uncharacteristic of them.
Yeah, and you know, not for nothing, I want to apologize for something I said last week. My brother, who is a diehard Islander fan as well, he kind of cleaned up some stuff for me, and he kind of actually went after me off the air. I do want to apologize. He made something very clear. He said that, you know, it's been very popular, the popular opinion, to kill them for playing at the Barclays Center this series instead of playing at the Barn. And he wanted to be very clear about this, not just for me to get it right, but for all Islander fans to understand that the only reason that they have a team in New York still is because of the Barclays. The Barclays has never made any money until this year off the Islanders. So when you take all that into consideration, yeah, they did deserve a playoff series. They did deserve the opportunity to make some money on their investment. And we need to stop killing the Islanders for taking the money because they owed it to them. And the fans should be grateful because without them, the Islanders would be somewhere in Canada right now without the Barclays. So I crushed them, and he said I did so unfairly, and he kind of cleaned that up for me, and I just wanted to put that out on air.
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, it makes sense, man, Mike, but at the same time, watching games 1 and 2 at the Barclays Center, the atmosphere from the fans, or the energy from the fans, I should say, nothing like the Coliseum.
No, you're right. But at the same time, once again, there's a big difference in the New York Islanders and the Quebec Islanders or find somewhere Vancouver Islanders or
listen, if that's actually the case and that's what saved the Islanders and kept the Islanders in New York, by any means. Look, they're moving into a new arena, not next season, what is it, the season after next?
But they haven't broke ground, have they?
I don't think that's the thing.
They still haven't broke ground either, right? So, once again, what's keeping them in New York?
And it's everyone
has acknowledged they can't financially survive.
Before they redid the Coliseum was horse poop.
What does it hold? It doesn't even hold 20,000 people.
Yeah, it's very small. Very small.
That's what I'm saying. From a financial standpoint, you can't run a professional franchise out of the Coliseum being your home stadium.
Yeah.
You can't. It's just not possible. And that's why he just wanted that out there. Okay. Not just, for the fans, simply because, you hear a lot of people, a lot of professionals, a lot of analysts saying, hey, this was a money grab. But unfortunately, it wasn't. It was a necessity.
Fair enough. What's your brother's name?
Chris.
Chris. Great point, Chris. Thanks for listening to the show, and we appreciate that opinion. Makes a lot of sense. But let's talk about some of these free agents that the Islanders have. And let's start off with Filippula, man, like Mad Mike. And it's probably looking like he might want a one-year deal, either from the Islanders or from someone else. But I thought that he gave the Islanders stability, as a team's third-line center. And would allow a little bit more time. The Islanders have a young man in their system named Otto Kuiva to develop. So maybe the Islanders touch that. Maybe they, bring him back for another year. Or maybe they, just let him walk. And given that Eberle's age, Jordan Eberle, he turns 29. And production, the Isles will probably look to upgrade unless they could bring him back on a short-term deal, which is unlikely. But the two guys that they need to bring back, Mad Mike, is Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, and Robin Leonard. And they all need to be re-signed. Lee brings, obviously, goal scoring and leadership to the Isles. It would not be good if the Islanders lost their captain 2 years in a row. All right? They can't let Lee go. Now, do you pay him as one of the top hockey players in the NHL? No. He's not that. But you have to do everything in your power to keep him around.
Sorry to jump in real quick. I think that losing John Tavares not necessarily, and them seeing what Toronto went through this year, I think that helps you with Lee as a negotiating team.
Yeah, no, you're right. And look, let's talk about Brock Nelson. He broke through this year under Barry Trotz. He played a consistent two-way game. He had 20, he scored 25 goals and totaled 53 points. As one of the Islanders' top centers. And centers are hard to come by. Replacing Brock would not be easy if they decide not to sign him. And also, I thought that Robin Leonard showed everyone this season the goalie he was capable of becoming. He and Thomas Greiss made a great tandem this season. And the Islanders have a goalie by the name of Ilya Sorokin. It's probably a year away from coming over to the NHL. And while he's a top prospect, he's not given... in terms of being a number one netminder just yet. And Leonard fits like a glove with the Islanders. So re-signing him makes all the sense in the world for both sides.
Well, didn't him and Grice win the Jennings Trophy?
Yes, they won.
For allowing the least amount of goals?
Least amount of goals, yep.
There's things to think about, man. So it's you're right. I'm with you. I think you got to keep Lee. I think the only one that's a question mark for me is Jordan Eberle. And they got to look for a little bit more. Just a few more veterans, maybe low key free agent signings. Philippoulos and Kamara, they look kind of gassed in this round too. That grit, that grind, that kind of defensive wear you down style, it doesn't just wear down the other team, it wears you down too. So they do have to figure that out too. Maybe try to get a couple more low key free agent signings to keep building the depth of the team.
I do,
along with keeping their own.
Look, I do think Lou needs to add an offensive player that fits in the Trotz's system along with his, you know, his hockey principles. The question is, can Lou land that player through free agency? It's not like the Islanders don't have money. You know, Artemi Panarin and Matt Duchene, those are two guys that, you know, can provide some offensive punch. Or does he go the trade route? Look, the bottom line, man, Mike, and we both said this, and I've said this numerous and countless amount of times, is that the Islanders need more scoring. All right? The Islanders finished the regular season, man, Mike, with the 22nd best offensive goals per game. 272, I believe. No, 2.72 goals per game. That's what they average. And that time scoring goals this year has been maddening for the Islanders. During the regular season, the Isles were either shut out or scored just one goal in 21 games, man, Mike. That's 25% of the season, listeners. And I suck at math. And on the converse, when the Isles scored three goals or more in the regular season, they were 38-2-2. And in the playoffs, the 10 held the form with their series against the Pittsburgh Penguins, like I said. They scored goals against Pittsburgh. And then what happened against Carolina? The most scores they go to the game, most scores, goals they scored, I'm sorry, listeners in the game was two. And that needs to improve. The offense needs to improve. And that starts with a top forward, a top center. And also, Matt Mike, during the regular season, the Isles power play was one of the league's worst. They ranked 29th.
Here's the one thing that you have to be careful about, and I'm going to tell you from past experience, just that rooting for the New York Rangers. The Rangers chased that guy for years. Marion Gaborik, Rick Nash, they chased that kind of player for a long time, and you have to think one thing. Does that guy fit into the kind of defensive system you're trying to implement? Because these guys never, ever did, and the Rangers kind of struggled, even with the kid that's on there, Kreider. Now, they've kind of struggled to find a way to maximize what he does well with their defensive style at the time. So,
I was saying he has to fit in the Trotz system. Whoever it is,
correct.
You just don't, you know, he has to fit into his style of play.
And that's why Alex Ovechkin works so well, because Alex Ovechkin does it all. He can, be an offensive juggernaut, but he's a defensive, he's unreal. He's unreal as far as being able to do it all. And that's why that worked. Sidney Crosby, for example, Sidney Crosby couldn't play in Barry Trotz's system. So I don't think he would be a fit. And I think Sidney Crosby is maybe the most offensively skilled, gifted player in the NHL over the last 10 years. But I don't think he could play in Barry Trotz's system. I don't think he could play in Tortorella's system. So that's you're right. You're 100% right. It's a matter of finding the right fit in the system.
Right.
Otherwise, it's throwing away money.
Yeah, man, Mike, listen, I'm not asking the Islanders to have the power play efficiency of the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, having said that, it can't be inefficient either, because it hurt them. It hurt them. You know, they had to play excellent defense, and they did for the most part. But you know what? Carolina plays excellent deep. They're an excellent defensive hockey team as well. And it showed in this series, man, Mike. They're real scrappy. You know, their goals come off of, you know, if you make mistakes, they capitalize.
No, you're right. You saw that in Game 3, right? In Game 3, I believe they were tied out. They were tied with 10 minutes left in the game. And I don't think the Islanders had but three shots in the entire third period. Whereas, and I think the first one came with about 3 minutes left in the game. And they were just peppering and peppering. Carolina was just forcing it and going after them. And you're right. But once again, speaking from experience, dude, you have to get the right guy, because when the Rangers went away, went the Alain Vigneault route, and they started looking at more offensive-minded players that were weak on defense, Hank lost his mind, because they're giving up too many defensive breakdowns. And you saw that actually this year, and Quinn was trying to fix that this year. Because, that's a mindset. Bad habits start to build when you're thinking just offense defensively. You know, you're really bad in the zone, and that's the only thing that I have. That's the only issue I'm gonna have with them, is they got to get the guy right. They have to get the guy right if they go outside the organization.
I agree, but you know, listen. The bottom line, Matt Mike, and I'm pretty sure you agree with me on this, is that Lou and Trotz have their foundation and culture well underway. And that's very important. Very important. And this offseason, in my opinion, is just about putting this team in position to take the next step. But like you said, they have to get top players that fit their system or the style of play that Trotz is preaching out on the ice. You can't have, and maybe that's why the Islanders decided not to re-sign John Tavares, Matt Mike, because you know he doesn't play a lick of defense. None whatsoever. So maybe, listeners, maybe that's why the Islanders decided to let him walk. Who knows? Who knows? Is that type of player out there? I don't know. We'll see. But they damn sure need some help with scoring. They need somebody that can put that damn puck in the net on a consistent basis. They have a bunch of gritty guys. But they need somebody that can put that damn puck in the net. And until they get that, this is what we're going to be looking at from the Islanders moving forward. But I have faith, and there's something to look forward to as Islander fans. We have something to look forward to, and it's a great thing. We've been fiending for this for a long time. So let's see what happens. But congratulations to the New York Islanders for having a very successful season. And as Islanders fans, we should all be proud and happy and have something to look forward to moving forward. So now, Matt Mike, let's talk about some NBA playoffs. There's some basketball being played. All right? Great series with Portland and Denver. Loving that series. I'm loving the Houston and Golden State series. I'm loving the Boston and Milwaukee series. And I'm loving Toronto and Philly series. Great. Listen, great playoff basketball is being played this year, Matt Mike. How about that triple overtime game the other day with Portland and Denver? Big game for Portland. Yeah, I'm sorry. Four quadruple, right? Four times. Big win for Portland. Big win. Big win. Big win.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you something, Lloyd, about the NBA playoffs. If Golden State wants to repeat or three-peat as champions, they're going to have to – Steve Kerr, one, is going to have to start coaching. I know that he hasn't done a great job of coaching or had to – he hasn't had to coach much over his last 2 years since they got KD. But I'm going to tell you this. I watched that game on Saturday night, and I watched that game too. And Steph Curry is shooting – I don't know if he feels like the forgotten man. I don't think he wants to relinquish the reins to his team, but – listen, Kevin Durant can't be on fire. Kevin Durant scoring 27 points in a quarter and a half in the second half in game three, and then only getting two shots in the final 6 minutes of the game after Steph Curry is reinserting back into the game while Steph is shooting 10 shots in the fourth quarter.
How bad did he look? I've never seen Steph Curry look that bad before, Matt Mike.
This is what LeBron James used to say about him. You know, he's a bad shot shooter, and when they're going in, we're all amazed by it. And when they're not going in, he doesn't know what to do. And I watched him do that on game two as they were just finding everything, cutting to the hoop. Draymond Green had to say something to him. They caught it on camera where he's telling Steph, pass the, you know, effing ball. And then you see it again on game three where they climb all the way back into the game off, on Kevin Durant's back, on his. He puts the team on his back. He's just, I mean, he was unconscious. And then Steph gets reinserted, and all of a sudden, KD isn't even... I mean, KD didn't even get a shot in the final 3 minutes of overtime.
Call
How's Kevin
Mello
Durant not shoot the ball in the final 3 minutes of overtime? That's Russell Mello Westbrook type Anthony. Stuff. But you want to know what, Lloyd? That's why I can see him coming here. Him and Kyrie, I can see it.
Now, I was talking to somebody, Matt Mike, and somebody seems to think that one of our loyal listeners goes by the name of Paul. Paul seems to think that if Golden State wins, it might not have been Paul, it might have been somebody else, but I was talking to somebody, and forgive me, Paul, if I'm saying you said this and you didn't. But if Golden State wins, the KD might stay to win another ring.
I hear it, Lloyd.
Chase the Jordan.
The whole four thing, right? Yes. Everyone's talking about four has never been done. Here's why I don't think it matters. One, if you notice over the last, especially this year, things seem like they're a lot harder for them, right? Seeing you don't want to be the guy on that team that loses. It's just like when LeBron, that's the scarlet letter for LeBron, right? How you lose two finals with Bosh and Wade and that super team, right? Get out before that happens. That's one. And I'm sure he's thinking that way too. Get out before that happens. And then, if I'm going to lose or things are going to be tough for me, don't you think he wants to go somewhere where he's going to get the credit? Like they lost on Saturday night, and is Steph Curry getting blamed for the loss? No, of course not. Is anyone talking about the game KD had? No, nobody's talking about the game
I'm
KD had.
I'm telling you right now, Matt Mike, if KD leaves that team and the team is constructed the way it is right now, I don't think they're going back to the NBA Finals.
No, I mean, neither. The window closes. But I'm going to tell you the same thing about Boston, right? If Boston can't beat Milwaukee right now, this series, with their current roster, you think Kyrie's going to stay?
I think he's out either way.
No, but I'm just saying, you know, because people are like, oh, why would he leave? Well, they don't have any more of these top five draft picks, do they? They don't have these top five picks anymore that they built their roster on. The Nets deals are done. The Kings deal is done after this year, and that's not a top five pick. The Clippers deal is done after this year, and that's not a top five pick. That's actually not even a lottery pick. So when you start looking at all these things, to me, I'm saying, he's looking at you saying Milwaukee's only going to get better. If Toronto keeps Kawhi, they're only going to get better. Philadelphia is only getting better right now. Do I want to stay here where this is what we are? Or yeah, do I want to, and financially we're tapped out? Or do I want to say, if I see the Knicks got the one or two pick, and Anthony Davis,
well,
or...
Well, we're hoping one or two.
Well, you know what I mean. But, like, I'm looking at that, and I'm
they
saying...
They have a lot of young talent,
get...
too. I think that right now, I mean, say what you want to about Boston, the Knicks have a lot of young talent that a player of KD's, you know, caliber and Kyrie's
can
caliber...
Can change it all.
Yes, and they could be excited about playing with... Mitchell Robinson, if he's still there. You know, Alonzo Trey, if he's still there.
Yes, and that's my point.
Yes.
That this playoffs can tell us a lot about our future with them. And I'm telling you, I'm sure they're looking at it and saying, if things are getting harder, why don't I go somewhere where I'm going to get maximum credit for winning? And you know what I mean? If I'm going to lose, why the hell I don't want to be the face of losing in Golden State. Are you crazy?
Yeah.
I'd rather lose in New York.
Look, not only that, and I will say, going to the Denver game, man, Mike, Denver and Portland, Denver, Lord, they missed so many free throws down the stretch.
Yeah.
Got to nail free throws. I mean, look, listen, basketball, I've played basketball, you played basketball. I'm sure a lot of the listeners have played basketball. Woo! That running up and down the court and banging, that's something else. It's tough, but you got to hit your free throws. To me, that's what caused them to lose that game. Miss free throws. And they made some mistakes down the stretch, turned the ball over a few times.
Yeah, you know, I'm pulling for Portland, and it's killing me, man. Because
you know what, I'm not mad if either one. I don't really, you know, I wouldn't say I want Portland to win over Denver. And I want Denver to win over Portland. I am kind of pulling for a lot of people pulling for Damian Lillard.
I'm pulling for him because of his comments. Like I don't need the NBA championship to be validated. And what he's saying is not necessarily that he doesn't want to win one. What he's saying is, I'm not going to leave here and go build a super team just to say I'm a champion. I'm going to try to win it here. And if that doesn't happen, then that's what the cards are. And that's why I'm pulling for him. Because, like, he is just a baller, man. Just a baller. Like, I don't want that easy
way out. And I would like
to
point out that at some point there were trade rumors, and he did have the Knicks on his list of teams that he would be willing to go to. So you're saying,
yeah, and he's being quiet. Listen, that can still happen.
Yeah.
That, you know, remember something. That's one of the reasons for the help me out here. What was the point guard? The KP trade. Who we got back? Dennis Smith Jr. That's one of the Dennis Smith Jr. One of the reasons for that trade, because that's a guy that they take back in a Dame Lillard trade.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Like when you think about it from that standpoint, is that can happen too.
And now with the Milwaukee Boston series, man, Mike, I think the key to Milwaukee winning that game was Giannis Antetokounmpo played team basketball again. I thought he kind of game two, the game that they lost, I thought he kind of got away from that, and I saw him take the ball to the hoop quite a bit, and he was driving to the basket, and he had three guys guarding him. He was still trying to force up shots. And in the next game, it kind of flowed. He was more efficient. He's going to get his points. He's that good of a player. But get your points from within the system. Do what's gotten you, to where you are. Which caused you to have the best record in the Eastern Conference. One of the best records in the NBA. Don't stray away from that. Do what makes this, continue to do what has made this team successful all season. And they got back to that. And if they continue to play like that, man, Mike, it's a wrap for Boston. Is not going to win another game.
Nope. But let's not say that, because after Paul Pierce said that this series was over after game one, look at what Milwaukee's done. So let's not put the jinx on Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm so sick and tired of hearing Paul Pierce's mouth.
Yeah, I'm done. It bothers me because we know what it is, man. It's that ESPN hot take. And you see other guys don't want to co-sign it because they know what he's doing and why he's doing it. And it's disgusting to me. It really is.
Yeah. So now moving on to the other series, which is Philly and Toronto, good series there also. Toronto pulled out a tough victory in Philly yesterday, man, Mike.
Behind Kawhi Leonard's unreal
game. I say this, if Kawhi leaves that team, man, Mike, and there's a chance that he might stay, but if he leaves that team, right, where the hell does that put Toronto? All right? If Jimmy Butler leaves Philly, I think Philly will still be successful, but let's face it, Jimmy Butler's played really well in the playoffs. Okay? If Kyrie leaves Boston, where does that put Boston? So I say that to say, listeners, if the Knicks could somehow get Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and a top pick in this year's draft, and maybe sign another solid veteran, well, guess where the hell that puts the New York Knicks?
Especially if Kawhi goes to the Clippers and Jimmy goes
exactly
to the Lakers.
That's what, the only team in the Eastern Conference that might be better than the Knicks will be Milwaukee. And Milwaukee might lose Chris Middleton. Who knows what they're going to do with Brook Lopez? They have some free agents or some players that they need to decide what they're going to do with them.
Yeah.
And you see what the hell KD is doing, right? He's single-handedly leading that team further in the playoffs. Draymond Green has played well. I'll give Draymond Green some props. Andre Iguodala's played well, man, Mike. But let's face it. If you remove KD from the Golden State Warriors, is that team actually winning the games that they're winning this year in the playoffs, man, Mike? I don't think so.
No, not at all.
I don't think so. Look, I would be highly disappointed if KD doesn't come here, But listeners, we gotta put in our hearts that there's a chance that that can happen. So we won't get upset and we won't go out and start burning Kevin Durant jerseys and all that kind of stuff. Keep in mind, listeners, that there's a chance that he can still say no. And all of this sure thing that KD is coming here, that makes me nervous, man, Mike. That scares me a little bit. I actually don't like to hear that. Because we've had such bad luck as Knicks fans, and our expectations, all that does is that puts more expectations in Knicks fans that he's coming. So what happens when he doesn't come? Boy, that's going to be a big letdown. I'm going to be very disappointed. But I also got to have that. There's a slight chance that he might not come. But look, again, we're in a position to do something that we haven't done in years. So the one good thing that I'm happy about is I'm excited again. I'm excited to be a Knicks fan, and I'm excited about, you know, the opportunities that they have in front of them and moving forward. Can't be mad. But before we close the show out and before we go to Mad Mike's rant, let's talk a little baseball, Mad Mike, as the Mets continue to reel. And a few weeks ago, the beginning of the season, I was giving this team props and raving about them. And you said it. Give it some time. Give it some time, Lloyd. And the Mets eventually show their true colors. These guys have one of the worst offensive teams in baseball, man, Mike. One of the worst offensive teams. The only bright spot is Alonso, who's on pace to win Rookie of the Year if he keeps it up. He's the only bright spot on. I'm talking about as far as in the Mets lineup, listeners. The only bright spot. I can't think anybody. Can you think anybody else? I can't think anybody else.
I mean, Jeff McNeil?
Yeah. But you said they still sticking this dude in left field.
Yeah.
And I know, I penciled him in as a strong left fielder. And you was like, Lloyd, he's not a left fielder. The Mets are reaching with this. And talking about somebody that was drafted to play professional baseball and played the outfield, he looks uncomfortable in the outfield, Matt Mike. He looks uncomfortable. They're force-feeding this young man to play the outfield. Forcing him. Look, as a Yankee fan, listen, good. I'm glad the Mets suck again.
I mean, what worries me is their pitching staff, right? Noah Syndergaard has been, outside of his last start, he's been kind of brutal. Jason Vargas has been...
Jacob DeGrom, man, Mike.
Yeah. Jacob DeGrom doesn't seem like he's right. I don't care what they say about the elbow. He doesn't seem right. Jason Vargas, like I said, he's been solid, but he also doesn't give you anything more than 4 or 5 innings. It's to the point now where it's like, hey, I got my 4 or 5 innings out of him of between 1 to 3 run ball. And, he reminds me of a guy who you're like, all right, I'm going to pull him now at three runs. So he looks like he had a decent start because I know the wheels are going to fall off. Steven Matz actually was sent back to New York over the weekend to get an MRI on his elbow. His forearm, I believe it is. And I think they said that there are issues there. So he might be looking at extended time. Who knows?
How crazy is it? A bunch of aces are having bats. Corey Kluber. Jacob DeGrom.
I'm going to be something else that we got to talk about. But home runs are up. It was the highest home run April since 2000 in the height of the steroid era. And they outhit them by about 80-something home runs. So,
yeah, I was going to say, people were saying they might have did something with the ball.
Again, it's a juice ball. It's a juice ball. And I'm telling you right now, MLB smart, right? Just, hey, guys, we'll get you your home runs. Don't do drugs. Don't do steroids. We'll find a way to cook the books and bring home runs back to the game. And they're doing it. And regardless of what you want to say, if that's cheating, maybe it's not cheating. If everyone's using the same juice ball, then everyone's on a level playing field. And now all of a sudden, you don't have that argument of, well, you know, I lost my job to a guy who did steroids, you know,
You know what they say, man, Mike, chicks dig the long ball.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? That's the argument. The argument is basically, well, everyone is doing it because we're using the same ball, so you can't use the excuse anymore. But listen, it's in the end of the day, going back to the Mets, their pitching staff stinks this year. And it could be because of the juice ball, but at the same time, if you're building your team solely on a pitching staff, on your pitching, in today's day and age, it's brutal. It's like building an all-defensive team in football when they're clearly trying to play to the offense. And that's where the Mets are stuck right now, building a team geared towards their starting pitching at a time when baseball wants to do away with elite starting pitching.
Yeah. Well, look, let's move quickly to our team, the New York Yankees. And I'm sure, you know, we're running out of time on the show, but James Paxton.
The inevitable. The inevitable. We knew it.
Listen, when I heard or got reports that he was going on the injured list, I thought of you, Mad Mike, and I just started laughing. I was like, boy, I know Mad Mike can't wait to talk about this. I'm going to let you do your rant on this. The Yankees are playing, you know, decent baseball. You know, but I'm sure you got a lot to say about that. So before we get to your rant, I'll let you say what you got to say about James Paxton and J.A. Happ, who continues to stink.
After, you know, you just beat me to it because I was just going to say, hey, Lloyd, all I have to say about it is James Paxton only went 3 innings on Friday night, and the inevitable injury that we were all waiting for, because that's what this guy does. He just gets hurt. Followed up by the expected J-Hap dud. The absolute dud he throws up the very next day when this team absolutely needs him. He loses yet again to a really good a team that you need to beat. And thank God that they did win the series. They did end up beating the Twins. But, you know, enough already. And you feel bad for Aaron Boone. I do want to say Aaron Boone is doing one hell of a job. And one other thing, my last thing on the Yankees, since we're running out of time, I sent out a message on Friday. I saw Joe Rivera, friend of the show, sent out a tweet as well saying trade Gary Sanchez. That's for all the haters last year that bailed on Gary Sanchez. What they never realized last year was Gary Sanchez had historically one of the worst luck seasons in all of baseball. And when I say that, I'm talking about exit velocity. He had the hardest hit balls, the highest rate of outs made on hard hit balls in baseball last year. I think the average on a ball hit 98 miles per hour or something was like 280. Average, and he was hitting under 200 last year on balls hit 98 miles per with a 98 mile per hour exit velocity. That told me that, you know, basically it was just an unlucky season. Chalk it up. So now, just to give you an idea, barreled balls is you know, basically balls that are hit a launch angle, a specific launch angle, and a specific exit velocity. Right. The average amount of balls barreled this year is 8%. 8% of all hits have been barreled balls. Do you know what Gary Sanchez's number is, percentage?
No, fire away.
It's 34%.
Ooh.
So listen,
you've been quoted as saying that he's the best hitter in the Yankees lineup, and you stuck behind him. And listen, we both agreed that he wouldn't have that, you know, we wouldn't expect him to have another bad season like he did last year.
That 8% includes Gary Sanchez's number. So when you remove Gary Sanchez's at-bats from that 8%, that 8% is actually going down. So let's say that 8% is really 7% for the rest of the league and 34% for Gary Sanchez. Think about that. For all of these haters that want him gone, that say he's not as good a hitter as the Yankees believe he is, he's not doing his thing, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. And that's my last take on the Yankees.
All right, there you have it, listeners. But the Yankees, until hopefully the cavalry comes back. Oh, also, Miguel Andujar, first game back, 2 errors.
He's not going to field the ball this year, I'm telling you. I don't care what the Yankees tell you, why are they
sticking him in the field? Why not keep Gino there?
I wouldn't even be playing Andujar this year because he has to get surgery. They can't avoid it.
That made absolutely no sense to me, man. Why put him out there?
So my take is Okay, go and get the surgery now. Go and get the surgery now. You know why they don't want him to get the surgery now? Because they don't want to spend the money. They don't want to spend the money to get another player. And they believe me, they know that Gio Urshela is not. He's playing out of his mind. He's playing above anything he's ever shown in his entire career. And before anybody says, well, where did he come from? He's playing on his fourth team, Lord.
Yeah, and yeah. He's never had, you know what? I didn't realize that until they brought up the history of him.
So the Yankees know that what he's doing now is not for the entire season. And that's why they're bringing back Andujar. To me, that just proves to me that they don't want to spend the money. They don't want to spend the money it takes to. So don't tell me that it's about winning championships and competing. Because what you're showing me is it's about winning at a cost.
Yeah, I got into a big debate with one of my coworkers over Andujar. And I'm like, you don't realize how much this dude kills a team when he's in the field. You don't know.
You know, it's funny because you totaled 180 from last year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my right. But you know what? My whole thing is the reason why I did that was because they kept him out there the entire season, right? And the person that they brought in, to me, man, Mike, wasn't a better player. And right now, Gio is playing better defensively, and he's giving you a good enough output offensively. And everybody else is hurt. Stanton is hurt. Judge is hurt. You know, Aaron Hicks is hurt. So why not D? You know, why I was watching. They had Mike Ford DH'ing, man. Mike Ford. Who they sent down.
Here's the thing. When and if, because once again, Stanton has been an injury-prone player his entire career, too. But once Stanton comes back, he's your DH. Yeah. So, once again,
you're going to have to put him back in the field.
I would just get the surgery now because he's not going to be your DH for the whole year. And here's something else I'm going to tell you. The fact that they're pulling this with Andujar tells me that they think Stanton is worse than what they're telling us. Because he's your DH. Why are you trying to preserve Andujar's season as a DH if you already know you have this guy as a DH?
Oh, boy.
I mean, that's just me reading the tea leaves. Maybe I'm reading too far into it, but I'm just telling you
it went from an arm to a shoulder, right? Wasn't it initially an arm injury?
Yeah, here's what I will tell you. Biceps tear not only at the elbow. Biceps tear at the shoulder. And I can tell you that because I remember when I tore my bicep, I tore it at the elbow, and the doctor said, hey, only 13% of torn biceps happen at the elbow. It's actually better if it tears at the shoulder. It's an easier rehab. Still to say, it's still rehab. It's just an easier one. So I'm telling you right now, that strain might have not been a strain. It might have been a tear. And they're trying to rehab the tear at the shoulder and made it worse. Who knows?
What the hell is going on with the Yankees training staff, dude?
I'm spitballing. I'm speculating. But I'm just going based on all these injuries.
So many injuries, man. So many injuries.
Bicep strains at the shoulder. He should have already been back. We're told he got hurt the first series of the season. He got hurt in the series against Baltimore to open a year.
Well, listen, we'll see. Obviously, we have so much more to talk about in the weeks moving forward as we close in on our special 100th episode. But it's that time of the show that we all love. It's time to let Mad Mike do his thing and go on his epic rant. So, Mad Mike, what's your rant for the week, brother? Let the listeners have it.
Listen, Lloyd, I'm going to be very honest with you. And you know me, I don't like to, even though I think that race and sports go hand in hand in certain things, I don't like to bring them into it. But I'm going to tell you something. Mike Francesa going at, you know, this kid after being shot, this kid Ballantyne for the Giants, and, you know, it didn't sit well with me. For him to say that they took a bad kid, and they didn't take a great character guy because he was involved in a shooting where his best friend was murdered and then being forced at, and he did this on Monday before the facts came out. So he already had jumped to a conclusion. And I swear to you, if I'm telling you right now, I think that he only did it because of race. I don't. That's just my personal opinion of it. I could be wrong, but I do think that he jumped the gun, and then he tries to dismiss culpa, saying basically they didn't take a bad kid. It wasn't his fault. It was just a bad situation. It was a terrible, tragic situation. He never once said sorry to the kid. The kid's dad had to come out. He had to come out in defense of his son. And Mike Francesa, even though he was wrong, he had the facts wrong. Never once apologized to the Giants franchise. He never once apologized to this player or his father or to the parents of the murdered individual. You know what I'm saying? And the reason I say that I bring race into it is because if Mike Francesa wasn't white, would he have got away with it? If he was anybody else, if he was Mike Smith from ESPN, would he have got away with this? No. Would Jamil Hill have got away with the same thing? No. But for some reason, it gets swept under the rug, and he's allowed to go on his tirade and call the Boomer Esiason show and make a spectacle of it in defense of himself. And he was wrong the whole time, and never once did he apologize. How does that get allowed in today's day and age, in today's sports, with today's listeners? Why is that acceptable to anybody? I don't get it. That's why Michael K. Show's number one, and he's not anymore. Because this is the same kind of tired ass stuff that everyone, that people want to move on from. It's unacceptable, man. I think that everybody needs to petition and demand apology from this man.
That's a great point, man, Mike. And, you know, I was going to say something about Mike Francesa, you know, and I think a lot of it has to deal with, and I don't know if he's just personally going at the Giants because he was saying that the Giants are upset with him. You know, with the whole Eli Manning thing where, you know, he came out and said the reason why Eli Manning didn't want to do a show no more was because he didn't want to be a backup quarterback. And, you know, he also
said, you know what? Much respect to Eli for that, because, Lloyd, it's not like Eli's wrong for it. I understand that he's mad because, you know what? That's one of his number one ratings getters during the football season is Eli Manning. But if you don't know where your future stands with an organization, you don't want to be the guy going on as a backup. And then what if Daniel Jones has a bad game? And Eli goes on his show, he's going to be asking him all these questions about Daniel Jones. You already know what the headlines are going to be if Eli says anything remotely close to negative about a performance of Daniel Jones. It was the smartest thing Eli could do.
Yeah, he's like one of those scorned
lovers.
People, yeah, in a relationship where he just goes to social media and just starts attacking a person's character, you know, once it's over. And all he's doing is he's ruining his relationship with the Giants even more.
Ruining his relationship with everybody.
Yeah.
People don't realize Boomer Esiason has a higher rated show than Mike Francesa. Why are you going at Boomer Esiason? To try to boost your 3 p.m. ratings in the morning? And then admit you don't even listen to a show? So what are you doing?
But you listen to it enough to call in and know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Or that he was
the reason why.
Yeah.
So people want to now listen at 3 p.m. to see what you're going to say about the incident. But you never once. My thing is this. You never once apologize. Never once in his mea culpa did he say, I'm sorry. And these are the kind of things that in a world where these things are happening, shout out to Alex Cora for saying that he's not going to the White House, specifically because of the treatment of Puerto Rico by the president. These are the kind of things that more people need to acknowledge is happening. It just has to. You have to demand more. If you don't demand better from a man like Mike Francesa, why should he give you better?
Great point. Great point. And with that, listeners, that brings us to the conclusion of this week's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Me and Mad Mike want to thank you, the listeners, for continuously listening to the show, supporting us, and sticking with us. And we also want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going. So, listeners, we have another great show for you coming up next week. So, until then, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike will see you in 7 days. So, Ayo! Let's get up out of here, baby.
And just like that, that brings our show to a close. All of you fine ladies and gentlemen, that have been listening, I thank you. If you subscribe, thank you. If not, please do so. And make sure you share it with your friends and your family, anybody that you know. But get into some sports talk. You got the best sports podcast, in my very humble opinion. The best sports podcast, the real sports and the real talk, right here with the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show. As you already know, episodes drop every single Monday. Head over to LloydAThompson.com. Follow on Instagram and Twitter at Lloyd A. Thompson. That's with two L's. Make sure you throw the second L in. And we'll catch y'all in a week. Peace.